All right, folks, we are back with the Lane 8 BMX podcast. This is a really cool podcast, this episode for me, to be honest with you, because when I moved back home to Minneapolis from Florida, Orlando specifically, I ended up racing a lot, full on every weekend. And if I could get to a weekday race, it was great. But one track that I really enjoyed was Rum River. And it ended up having to do some indoor stuff. They ended up building it indoor, covering it. And today, what we have is some folks that Alyssa and Josh that are really the ones that help run the track. And I really wanted to talk about what it takes to get something like that done. What's the rider count? And what does it take to maintain a track like that? It's got to be a big endeavor. So both Alyssa and Josh, thank you for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, yeah, glad to be here.
No problem. So let's just start at the beginning. Rum River was a track before it was covered. Can you talk to me about that?
I guess I can start a little bit. When we started, it was definitely an outdoor dirt track. Did have tarred corners at the time. We started probably 10 years ago, so 2012-ish. And by that time, Kevin Riedemann was our track operator and had the track pretty well running. It was it had come a long way in the previous years to us showing up. I think they would have about 5 motos a night way back when he got it started. It was kind of on a downward spiral when he jumped in. Dirt, ruts, weeds. He didn't know much about the sport, but knew that he wanted to give this track a go and get it up and running. So he had taken over, I don't know, early 2000s, maybe?
Yeah.
With a vision, and his vision continued on all the way to get us to the indoor facility.
Okay, so when did the idea of the indoor facility take place?
So we opened in 2015. It was a few years prior to that where we started to kind of talk about it a little bit. I mean, we were basically, you know, in Minnesota, we could run outdoors 4 months, 5 months, kind of depending on the weather. And one thing that we were lacking, well, we had an indoor track down at Rabines, an indoor track, kind of a smaller indoor track where you'd kind of do 2 laps per, you know, per moto. And we just knew that if we wanted to compete at a, you know, more national level, we needed to get a track built that we could host riding 365 days a year. And it's kind of where the vision came from. I don't know exactly the year that it started, but it was probably 2012 where we kind of started to get serious and started to kind of crunch the numbers and meet with the city and whatnot.
So how did that all come about? And what were the numbers, if you don't mind me asking, to actually put this thing, put a cover over it?
How much did it cost to put a cover over it?
Yes, ma'am. The whole shebang.
Oh, Josh, do you know offhand? I should know that number.
So the initial numbers we were shooting for, it was basically $2.6 million to get the building built. And of course, that's 2015. You know, you do that today, you could probably safely double that. Now, with those numbers, there was a lot of people in the sport donating their time, their company connections, you know, that kind of thing too, to help get the numbers to even that. And kind of when we proposed it to the city to get this all going, Kevin had spent a lot of time at the metrics and said, look, if we can keep 100 riders in the building every day we're open, we can make the numbers work. And that was really the number that we pushed for. We needed 100 riders at every practice. We needed 100 riders at every race. We needed to be racing 2 days a week. We needed to be running on all cylinders to make those numbers work. And we were very fortunate to have a city that believed in us. You know, here we are basically a group of nonprofit volunteers with an idea. And the city owns the building. The city put up the money to build the building. So the city to this day owns the building. They took out through bonding and stuff like that, the loan to build the building. And to be honest, all of us as volunteers could walk away tomorrow and the city's stuck with a big old building that they could turn into a public works shed or something like that. But it's a big endeavor that the city took on with basically our words saying, hey, we'll make it work. And it's been very successful.
I would have to agree. So when did you guys break ground and how long did it take till riders were inside? Because I remember walking into that building and just being blown away.
So literally in August of 2014, the last outdoor state final ran at the track and the last moto crossed the line and construction started. So like the fences got taken down around the outside of the track, like literally ground started getting broke into as soon as that last moto crossed the line at the end of state finals in August of 2014. The grand opening happened in March of 2015. So basically got built kind of during the off season.
Yeah.
And
extremely wet, cold off season. I remember the building being built and we were wondering if it was actually going to get completed in time. It was a little, I think, a little past the, you know, the scheduled time, but mid-March is when we had our grand opening.
Yeah. Remember that. Wow. Okay. So it's built. They will come. How have you guys done from the time that you've opened to, let's say, tonight?
So really, we've grown every year. I'm a big numbers guy. I track all of our metrics year over year, month over month. The weird thing is, of course, we had this thing called COVID in there for a couple of years, too. Yep. And COVID's actually done a weird thing for our sport. During the COVID time, we actually had to shut down for several months completely.
Yeah.
And of course, our bills didn't stop. We still had a lease to pay. We still had heating bills and stuff like that during the winter months to keep the building from freezing and stuff. But fortunately, we're in a financial situation where we could afford to weather that storm per se. But the nice thing with the COVID impact is there weren't a lot of the conventional sports available for people. You know, the footballs were shut down, the softballs, all the things that kids are used to. So we've seen a huge influx of people coming into the sport because their conventional things just weren't there for them. So really, our rider base today is way bigger than that 100 average that we needed to see when we first got the building open.
Wow. That is amazing. What has been talk to me about the races, because you have an indoor facility in Minnesota. Talk to me about the races that you guys have been able to attract over the years.
We'll be right back.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we're the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
So I think since 2015, I believe we've had three or four national events.
Yeah.
We have the Gold Cup finals here this year for the North Central region. That's coming up in about a month. Obviously, we have state finals at our facility every year. And one of the unique things we do in Minnesota, we profit share our state series. Being that state finals run at our track every year, there's 10 tracks in the state of Minnesota. So we're very blessed with having an awesome state series. We pool in all the Minnesota resources together. Every track jumps on board. Every track sends volunteers to work the state finals together. And then every track, based on their ridership that comes from their track, they take part of the profits for state finals back to their home track. as kind of making it a collective group effort for doing the finals. I believe we're one of the unique tracks or one of the unique states doing something like that in the country. It's worked really well for the state of Minnesota. And we do that all the way down the line from how we schedule our state series. We do it together as a group rather mm-hmm. than cutting each other's throats as far as when we're scheduling and stuff like that. So, but no, it definitely gives us the ability with having a roof over our head. We're always sheltered from the rain. It's not the sun beating down on us. You know, we're not going to get shut down because we get 2 inches of rain the day before. You know, even state finals this year, it rained 5 inches in our area just 2 days before the finals. And normally you'd be sweating bullets, you know, having that kind of rainfall right before finals. So, yeah. It's definitely a blessing having a roof over your head, but, definitely don't want to put the wrong message out there though. You know, we get the rider base and stuff like that because of a lot of the hard work we do into it too. It's not just, we got this roof, so the riders come. It's a lot of hard work to get it there too.
Yeah, it is definitely. And I've seen it. I'm curious just to get people to understand what we're talking about. How big is the facility? How big is the track? And how is it? Because you guys just went through a rebuild not too long ago.
So the facility itself is about 74,000 square feet, counting our office space, bathrooms, concessions. We have a full commercial kitchen, basically for our concessions and stuff too. So overall building about 74,000 square feet. Track itself right around 1,000 feet, depending on where you measure and, you know, what line you take to measure it and stuff like that. But of course, we try to make up a little lack in length with a little more challenge in the skill side of things. Done a pretty good job as far as taking care of the amount of space we have for staging and all that kind of stuff as well. Yeah. Super awesome that we have Full Tilt in the house day in and day out. They got a permanent home back behind corner number 3. So have a full-time bike shop right in the building all the time as well. So
and a little Strider track for the littles to play on.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, our balance bikes, it's actually blown up this year. We got almost 100 new balance bike memberships this year.
Wow.
And between them racing on the big track and their little Strider track that they ride on in between corner 2 and 3, they got their own little niche area too. So
not bad, not bad. You've also got what you guys just put down, blacktop for Full Tilt.
Yeah, so it's been probably a 4 or 5 year process now. I think the last time you were up here, Todd, it was all gravel where the pedestrian areas were.
Yep.
Around the outside of the track. And it's been kind of a dream of ours to get all of that covered with blacktop, just to cut down on the dust in the arena, cut down the amount of cleaning we have to do, just taking care of that dust all the time. And we just finished the last phase of that. So we got blacktop all the way around the entire arena. So everywhere outside of the riding surface is all blacktop surface now. So wherever you are,
it's been a really cool project to kind of see us like from the, you know, the beginning to this end now is planning for things like this, setting aside money for things like this, kind of some long-term planning and whatnot to see this get done has been awesome. To go home and blow your nose and not have the dirt in there anymore is awesome.
Yes, I do understand that. That is so funny. Talk to me about what does it take to run a facility like that? I mean, it's got to be expensive.
So realistically, our annual bills, you know, just our break even is about $350,000 a year.
Wow.
And keep in mind, that's with us all doing it as volunteers. We're not paid track operators. We don't have a paid accountant. We don't have a paid secretary. There's nobody on our board paid to do what they're doing. We're all doing it as volunteers. And we're basically day in and day out running a, you know, several $100,000 company in our spare time. You know, we're all doing this while doing full-time real jobs. We have a board of directors of 9 people, 2 track operators, and anywhere from 40 to 60 volunteers that we can pull from to keep our facility running. And that's what it takes to make it work.
Basically have to run it like a business.
Just our lease alone is over $7,000 a month. Just our heating bills during the winter can top over $7,000 a month. And you start adding all those different expenses and costs and stuff like that into there. When we order trophies, the last time we ordered single point trophies, we bought 1,000 sets to try to get us through the year to cover our single point awards to get us through a full season. So the scale that we deal with stuff, it's a big picture that we have to think about. And we're always looking at not only getting through this year, but trying to set things up for years to come as well. You know, like I said, we just did the paving project. We actually just did about a $65,000 lighting renovation to the building.
Wow.
I think when you were here, all the lights for the track were out on poles around the track.
Yep.
All that's gone now. Everything's up on the roof.
Are you serious?
Yep.
All LED lighting throughout the facility.
Wow.
So we just went through that. We even just did a big electrical upgrade to our concessions, you know, from when concessions was originally a concept before the building was built to what it is today. We just don't have the power that we need. So we had to do a big behind the scenes electrical upgrade to just keep our concessions up and running, you know. So there's a lot of things like that. We just put in some big grandstand bleachers. I think that was almost $30,000 between the 2 sets of bleachers that we ordered in. You know, so just stuff like that, that above and beyond the day-to-day operation stuff that we're keep putting money back into the facility too, to try to do what we can to make the best experience for the riders as well.
Not bad. Talk to me about your schedule for practice, racing, and things like that.
Go ahead, Josh.
So during the summer months, we're basically Tuesday, Thursday, we're racing. Mondays, we're practicing. We do that basically Memorial Day to Labor Day. Main reason we do that is because with having 10 tracks around the state of Minnesota, everybody's doing their state qualifiers on the weekends. Mm-hmm. Trying to miss the couple of close nationals. You know, you got Rockford and a couple other close nationals. And then once we get through Labor Day, we flip our schedule. We go to Tuesday practice, normally Tuesday, Friday practice, Saturday, Sunday racing. Next couple of weeks, we're going to actually try out doing Friday, Saturday, Sunday racing.
Wow. Just
to give it a try. You know, some people have been asking about getting in some more racing. Some people have problems with, we'll have Friday night practices with 140, 150 people there, and it gets kind of chaotic. So we're just experimenting to see if having a Friday night race rather than a Friday night practice, what it does as far as if people like it better, or kind of how that goes. Then typically in the fall too, we kick our clinic program back up. That's usually on Thursday nights. With having the Gold Cup finals in September, we're kind of holding off till October to get that going again.
Yeah.
And then it's pretty much our only free night of the week is Mondays and Wednesdays. And a lot of time the track gets rented out, you know, either by private rentals and stuff like that, or try to throw in some extra clinics. Alyssa's been doing an awesome clinic with some 12 and under novice intermediate riders. Nice. Or with the huge influx we've had with balance bike riders, getting those some private clinics to get those balance bike riders onto pedals, some stuff like that too. So it's almost 7 days a week once we hit the fall months that something's going on at the track.
Not bad.
But something almost always has to be going on, like to be able to support the financial numbers that we have within the organization. You kind of have to be busy. You have to be open. You have to, you know, create these clinics. You have to kind of be on your A game all the time, bringing in new riders, maintaining your ridership, coming up with, you know, different series and things, to be able to run this facility and keep keep being able to do these projects and whatnot.
Yeah.
These riders coming.
Well, you guys, it's funny you say that because you guys both led into my next question. The thing I'm curious about is who's racing and who's riding? What age groups are you seeing and are they sticking around?
So one of the really cool things that we've been seeing is the amount of adults coming back to the sport. One of the biggest classes right now, 26 to 35.
Really?
Like, and it was novice for a long time. Like we were getting two racks of 26, 35 novice almost every single point race day. Now a lot of them are turning into intermediate. And so that age group is blowing up. Five and under novice, I think a lot of that's our influx of Strider riders. They're all turning into the pedal bikes now. So the young riders too. And really, I've seen a lot of female riders coming on board.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
You look at all the way through novice and into the adults, the amount of female riders, it's almost out proportioning to the male riders. And I don't know if it's an attribute to the appeal to the sport, you know, compared to mainstream market sporting, or, you know, there aren't as many options for the girls with regular sports, so it's more appealing to be part of BMX or what, but we look at a lot of the age groups and there's almost more girls in the sport than boys.
That's cool to see.
Cause for a long time you've seen maybe one or two girls for every 10 boys, where now it's definitely not like that.
That's awesome. Do you think that the track has helped Minnesota riders when it comes to racing nationals?
Oh, 100%.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One of the big things, so like, you know, Todd, we do a thing called the Fire and Ice Series at Rome. Yep. And with the Fire and Ice Series, a component of it is called the Dog Dash Races.
Yep.
With the Dog Dash Races, basically everybody 12 and under races against each other, 13 to 39 races each other, and 40 and over races each other. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a little mini pro-am type series race where you kind of get to see who's the best of the best two times a month. And it gives an opportunity for that 14-year-old to get in the gate with the 18-year-old or the 30-year-old, or, you know, a couple of the really good riders that are here in the state. They don't have competition at their age where they can get into some of those races and have competition a couple of times a month, where they're actually in a full gate with other people that they can either chase or have chased them that they don't normally get. And just having that level of riders day in and day out competing with you makes you faster.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't have the most riders compared to some of the other states, but we definitely have a lot of nationally ranked riders for the number of riders we have.
I have to agree with you. I think it's quality over quantity.
Quantity, yes.
Yeah. Here's what I'm curious about, because being at home in Minnesota, there was one thing that I, no matter if it was a snowstorm, it was me and David Haas driving out to Rum River in the wintertime. How is the winter riding? Are you losing riders? Are you keeping them up? How is the winter scene?
You know, there's definitely some people that take the winter months off, you know, Just like any sport, they find other things, either hockey, or they just have the mindset that this is their off time, you know, because that's what their home track does. But some look at it as it's a way to get out. It's a way to still get on their bike. Yep. A lot of like the balance bike riders, you know, their kids are itching at home to get out and do something, where for relatively cheap, you can have a balance bike membership and get out to the track and burn off some energy all winter long, you know? And it's been really, for the most part, we don't shut down. Like, as long as we can get volunteers to the track, we're open. We've actually closed more times this year for it being too hot out.
Too hot, yeah.
Than we've ever had issues with, you know, but we have enough volunteers that live close enough that we really don't have to close for severe weather too often. And Boy, the riders that are close sure appreciate it when the doors are open. So
I actually think we were busier in the winter, though, just with other outdoor tracks closed down.
Yeah, I agree.
Their only option. And our building is, you know, closed. All the garage doors and whatnot are closed in the winters, too. So you're all in there. It's a much it's tighter. I think it's more exciting in the winter, actually. It's louder in the building, more people in there. But I think our moto count and our rider count is actually a little bit higher in the winter.
That's what I was thinking, because I remember driving in the middle of snowstorms to get to Rum River just to get on the track.
Yeah.
And the one thing I always tell people now living in Florida, and they'll ask me about, I have a lot of people that have asked me about Rum River, and I always tell them it's the atmosphere that I really, really enjoy. There's just good people there. And that leads into my next question of volunteers. It always seems that Rum River has the best volunteers.
You know, I think one of the biggest parts of that is we're year round. You know, every other track in our area, anyhow, you're almost starting over every year. Mm-hmm. You're getting everybody going again. You're trying to recruit people to start over again after having, you know, 6-7 months off of not doing it, where we're day in and day out, like we're running. And you know, I think we need on a race day, we need 22 people scheduled between running our concessions, our registration, the track. Like we have people stationed on every corner of the track. We have two people in the scoring booth, three people taking care of staging. You know, it's a pretty well-oiled machine the way we run. We run our single point racing just like a national runs. Our goal is to get people in, get them out as quick as we can. Get on with your day, you know, and we try to run no pause in between first and second round, take a little quick 5-minute intermission between second round and main events, and we get the show moving, you know, and people appreciate that we value our time and we value their time, you know, and right down to we got a schedule for, hey, end of the day, corner two, your job's the bathroom. Corner three, your job's the garbage, you know. everybody can just get it done and get out of there, you know. So,
Well, you know, I'll tell you this. There's one thing that I love, even being living away from Minnesota, this is one thing I love. And I don't know if you guys even notice it, but I always watch on the web. I always watch the races. Talk to me about when you guys got the web racing going.
Well, we kind of started doing the web racing when we were outdoors. Wow. Was a little bit of a, well, it's much different than we did now. Like I remember Aaron Zidane, I don't know if you remember him, and recording races and then having to go home and try to upload them. And it would take hours for him to upload. So he wasn't live watching, but you could go back and watch it. But once we moved indoors, we were able to up our game, so to speak. And yeah, we broadcast all of our races live on YouTube.
Yep.
And I think grandmas and grandpas and the Todd Wilsons of this world, they can tune in and see their riders. Or even I know our riders, they come home and they'll go back and rewatch videos and rewatch different things, you know, and they really, really appreciate it.
I'm telling you this, I'll be at work. And I'll have my work computer set up and I will have Rum River running. So I'm always watching. Let me ask you this. Where does the love come from? Because no one's getting paid for this. I mean, where does that love come from to just donate your time for others?
You know, for me, it's kind of in my blood. You know, my parents were volunteers when I was a kid growing up. I was a Cub Scout leader for 14 years. I coached 9 baseball teams. Like, I'm not one to just sit on the sideline. And I look at it as if I can do something to help, if I can do something to help something run better, I'm going to, you know, and I know no matter what, we're not going to do everything perfect. We're not going to make everybody happy with the way we're running things all the time. There's going to be people that aren't going to like some of the decisions we make with how we run things. But end of the day, we're all a group of volunteers coming together, doing it the best way we can. And if all of us decided tomorrow it wasn't worth it and we didn't want to do it anymore, we're done. Like, it quits the day people like us decide we just don't want to do it. And unfortunately, I think the day of a volunteer being there might be getting harder and harder. You know, it seems like there's less and less just wanting to give for the sake of giving in people. Mm-hmm. Like, more people are wanting to know what's in it for them, where there's still a lot of really good people in our organization that don't care about getting some perk for being a volunteer. They just want to be there to help, you know, and that's what you need. You need to want to help for the sake of helping first. And it's what it takes to run the facility. You know, if we had to pay everybody to do what we do, we'd go broke.
There isn't
enough income in the facility, or we'd have to triple what we're charging everybody to raise, because there isn't enough money in the facility to pay everybody to be staff, you know? Yeah. So we need good volunteers to keep the thing rolling. And I look at it as my kid's where he's at today with riding because we have the facilities we have all across the state. I mean, I look at every track in the state, from St. Michael to Pineview to Brainerd, all of them, mm-hmm. from when we started in the sport to where they are today, have improved leaps and bounds. And mm-hmm. it's all due to the awesome volunteers that spend their time day in and day out at those facilities. And a lot of those volunteers come and spend their off season volunteering at our facility, because they know theirs is closed down and they still want to give back to the sport. So it helps our load a little bit during those off season times.
Alyssa, where do you think the love comes from? I'm curious on your thoughts.
You know, some days I ask myself that same question. My love for this sport, I think, goes back to just, I really, really, really enjoy watching the young new riders enter our building, and, you know, they walk up to that gate scared out of their mind. I love working with them. I love our beginner league program. And it's those new riders, it's those novice riders that keeps me going. I love, you know, they'll run up to me after their race, or they'll show me their first place ticket. They're so excited. And it's those kids that make me come back day after day after day. Because it's something new. It's something fresh for them. It may not be new and fresh for me, but to see it constantly be new for another kid, I think, is what keeps me going.
Yeah. Has Rum River helped Minnesota BMX overall, in the sense of just bringing everyone together, creating new riders, and keeping them?
Well, I think the beginner leagues have really taken off within each track. I think I could be mistaken, but I believe most of the tracks in Minnesota are running these beginner leagues. And I think it's huge. It's getting them to, you know, 4 or 5 practices, 5 races. It's really trying to get these kids engaged in a brand new sport that they most often know nothing about. It's not in mainstream media, you know. When Johnny comes to the baseball field, most of the time they kind of know how to play baseball, but these mm-hmm. leagues are really helping these families, these kids, learn a new sport. And I think that in itself is really helping to grow the sport in Minnesota as a whole. And obviously these volunteers that are working at these tracks, I mean, I don't know many other sports like this that's basically based off of all volunteers. I mean, you go to a baseball game and you have a paid ref. You go to a hockey game and you have paid refs, kind of the thing. You go to a BMX track and it's all volunteers. It's volunteers day in and day out. But I think, you know, these beginner leagues and these our group of tracks working together as a whole is helping to grow our program.
Not bad. How many times has, if I can remember, how many times has Rum River been ranked as a top track in the country?
So we've been the number one central division track ever since we've been an indoor track. We were the number one track in the country 4 years. We're currently sitting the number two track in the country right now for this year. We've been the number one indoor facility since we've been built as well. But really for us, you know, it's a metric, you know, like I said, I'm a numbers guy. I look at the numbers all the time. I more look at how we're doing compared to how we've done in the past. You know, a lot of the tracks we're competing against, so to say, across the country, they're in cities with 250,000 people within a half hour of their facility. Yeah. We're in a town of 6,000 people in Isani, Minnesota. So when I look at the numbers, I'm looking at how are we doing today compared to how we did at this time last year or the year before that or the year before that. I run a lot of our metrics compared to 2019. We were the number one track in the country in 2019. That was pre-COVID, so you can throw all the COVID statistics out of the window. Mm-hmm. And comparing us to how we were doing in 2019, we're crushing it. But we're still the number two track when you look at the statistics comparing across the country. So I look at how our success is compared to what we're doing against ourselves. And our ridership continues to grow. Our memberships, our rider retention continues to grow. And I don't see it slowing down anytime soon.
Not bad. I'm going to ask you both a question, but I want you to answer it individually. My question to y'all would be this. What does all of this do for you as a person?
As a person, it keeps me extremely busy. I have people, I tell people, I punch out at my job at 4 o'clock on a, you know, afternoon, and that's when my day begins. It's kept me extremely busy, but at the same time, it's kept me driven. It's kept me engaged with my family. They're coming to the track too. And it's shown me, I think it's obviously made me a better person. I mean, the amount of volunteer hours that we put in, the amount of dedication and the time, the blood, the sweat, the tears, it's all cliche, but I truly hope that in the end, when I walk away from this sport, that people look at the things that we've done as an organization and realize that we're just really, really good people. I mean, that's at the end of the day, like, I'm pretty sure I'm a good person. I've worked hard. I continue to work really hard. And I honestly love what I do, because if I don't love what I do anymore, then I'm not helping anymore. I wouldn't be an asset to this organization. But as of right now, I'm not done. I love what I'm doing. Like I said, I love those little kids, and that's what keeps me going.
Josh, what's your thoughts?
She nailed a lot of it. You know, probably the hard part for me, of course, I own my own company, so I don't really punch out of my other job to start this one. I kind of do both all day long. But it really, there's definitely a sense of accomplishment when you see some of the stuff we do and some of the different series that we'll do and the smiles on the kids' faces when they're holding up the big trophy that they just won. And it's like, I built that trophy and we organized that series. And, you know, like, we were part of making that kid's day, you know, and I feel like I got a lot to give to helping the sport run. And if I can help make other people's day better and give kids something to do and other families a chance to spend some quality time together doing the sport. And, you know, I look at it as there's going to be a day where my kid doesn't want to do this anymore, you know, and when that day comes, I'll need to make the decision if I'm done too, or if I'm going to keep spending my time volunteering. You know, at this point, I don't know. I don't foresee that day coming anytime soon, but for now it's day in and day out. It's what we do. And I wouldn't have it any other way.
We don't know it any other way at this point.
That's a good way of putting it. What's in the cards for Rum River in the future?
It's a good question. It depends on who you ask. There's definitely some pipe dream, cool ideas of some building improvements that we're thinking of doing. I'm going to leave that very vague.
I see.
I don't know how much I can disclose. I don't see anything changing anytime soon. You know, I know when the building got built, the city kind of had the backdoor plan in their head, like, hey, if this thing fails, we'll turn it into a public works building. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? City's building a new public works building.
Yes.
So I don't think the city's worried about it failing anytime soon. So, we got some ideas for some things we want to do to keep things moving forward and keep making some improvements to the facilities, some things that we can do to keep making things a better and better experience for the riders. And we'll just have to leave it at that.
Not bad. Is there anyone that you'd like to thank?
My wife for putting up with me.
I was just going to say my husband for never seeing me.
That's pretty good. Well, you two, Josh and Alyssa, I want to say thank you for coming on the Lane 8 BMX podcast. I really appreciate it because if anybody knows from Minnesota to Florida, where I'm at now, I love Minnesota BMX. I love the tracks there. I love the people there. And any chance I get to talk to folks, to come back and race, definitely Minnesota is always on the calendar. So I want to say thank you both.
Well, thanks for having us.
You got absolutely it. Thank you for taking the time out of your evening and having us on.